Welcome, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the Review of All Rights Protection Mechanisms Subteam for Data Call on Friday, the 8th of June, 2018. On the call today, we do have Philip Corwin, Michael Graham, Susan Payne, Rebecca Tushnet, Christine Durain, and Kathy Kleiman, who has just joined us. Welcome, Kathy. We do have two guest speakers today, Greg Rayford and Stacey Chan from the Analysis Group. If anyone has joined only on the audio bridge, would you please let yourself be known now? Okay, hearing no names. We have no apologies for this meeting as well. From staff, we have Julie Headland, Ariel Liang, Barry Cobb, and myself, Michelle D. Snyder. As a reminder, if you would please remember to state your name so it appears clearly on the transcription. Thank you ever so much. And over to you, Julie Headland. Please begin.
Thank you very much, Michelle. And again, welcome to everyone who's joined the call today. Thank you so much for joining us on this Friday. And thank you very much, Michael, for sending the revised Google Doc around. And I had also sent it a little earlier, and we'll go ahead and put the link to that again in the chat. And I think that will be extremely helpful for us to start from the comments that you have made, and there Ariel has put it in the chat just now. And just to quickly run through the agenda, we're going to talk about the proposed trademark brand owner survey questions and suggested changes by Analysis Group. And this call is scheduled for 120 minutes, but if we can end earlier, I'm sure we'd all appreciate that too, but we should take as much time as we need and want. So. I'm going to go ahead and also just pull up the Google Doc myself, but I think I'm going to suggest that we could do it the same way that we were doing yesterday, which is to ask Greg and Stacey to run through the questions, and in this case, Michael's helpfully added his comments, so we can address those as we go. And I see Lori Schulman is just joining us. Thank you, Lori, as well. So are there any questions, any concerns, any other business that anybody would like to raise before we get going?
Well, one quick thing. This is Michael, for the record, Michael Grimm. As Greg and Stacey are going through it, there are a number of comments that have been added on the side, and I actually think that some of the top ones I cannot see. They sort of go off the page, so I'm not sure if there's a way to view those, but might want to refer to those as well. I don't know. I'll let you all decide how you want to deal with it, if you want to read the proposed revision as a talking point or the original.
Well, thank you very much, Michael. That's extremely helpful. And Greg and Stacey, I'll leave it up to you. How you want to do this. And actually, let me just ask Greg, Stacey, if you have any questions before we begin.
This is Stacey. I just also wanted to clarify, though, that unfortunately Greg is tied up in another meeting, so hopefully he'll be able to join us soon. But currently it's just me.
Well, it's not just you, Stacey. We're very glad to very glad to have you, of course, and hopefully Greg can join. But do you have any questions before we get started as we go through things?
No, not currently. I think the comments that are in the document are great. I've had a chance to begin scanning through them, so thank you, everyone.
And I see Kathy has a question. Actually, Kathy, we're starting with the trademark owners questions. We did actually cover all of the registry operator questions. The document you see on the screen is unsynced, so you can move it yourself to that section if you like, or if you prefer staff to move it for you. Then why don't we go ahead and get started. What we're doing is we're working with the revised document that Michael sent around. And that is for the trademark holder survey. And we've got quite a number of comments as well, also from, I see what you're saying, Michael, that that there's a comment right at the top that doesn't come through. It gets cut off at the top. I think that might be a comment from analysis group, so something I have just seen from our guidance document that we do not want an explanation of why not. Ariel, please go ahead.
This is Ariel from staff. Just a quick technical comment here. If you want to see the comment hidden on the top, you can look at the sections or sentences that are highlighted in the Google Doc, and once you click that, the comment will be aligned to that particular section that's being commented on. So that's the easier way to look at the comments.
Oh, thank you so much, Ariel. This is Julie again from staff. And actually, I did that, and so that one is the comment. I think it's the same comment for each of the surveys from Greg, and it has to do with the responses voluntary and confidential, and it says, for discussion with the data sub-team and ICANN staff, we understand there may be an interest in receiving the raw survey data from us and just want to ensure that if we do provide the data, that it will remain confidential. So that is that comment that is sort of stuck at the top, and I hope others have been able to see that too. And so then back to comments and scrolling down to question one. And I see that Michael has made some suggestions. In what country do you currently reside? ? And then the next question, question two, where are you or your company based? And go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, Michael Graham for the record. I see in regard to those first two questions, too, that Susan has posted a question whether or not we need both of those, asking, don't we just want to know if they are answering on their personal behalf or on behalf of their employer, and where the trademark owner, whoever that is based. I think that's probably true. I was sort of surprised by the two of them. But I think rather than replacing both of them, we need to replace one of them with that question. So it would be, are you answering for yourself or your company? And then the other one would be the location. In what country are you or your company based? I guess you could use that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Michael. And Christine, please go ahead.
Thanks. In this specific set, are we at all concerned about trying to figure out whether or not outside counsel is answering these questions, or you know, sort of maybe a consultant? If you have someone, if a company has someone who's managing their domain portfolio for them, because for instance, I can think of scenarios where, let's just pick on Mark Monitor, for instance, they might have a variety of customers for whom they've been sort of maybe a trademark agent or someone that participates in these sizes on behalf of various brands, and the brands themselves might not be able to answer these questions and may wish to outsource this survey to Mark Monitor. So do we want to try to, you know, I don't know how to deal with that question, but I'm wondering if we want to make that an opportunity so that the actual brand owners themselves can give this to the right person to get the most data. And perhaps that right person can answer the survey sort of multiple times for different clients. And so is there some demographics or some accommodations we need to make to account for that sort of scenario? I don't know. I'm asking. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. And Michael, please go ahead.
Thanks, Michael Graham, for the record. In regard to that, I think you're right in terms of where some of the information is going to be gleaned. But I think I would see if there's a way, and I know we did this with the INTA survey, which was much easier to control, to ensure that it's being answered at the end by the trademark owner, and whether or not we want to include the question, perhaps, were you assisted in preparing your answers and ask for whether or not that was outside counsel or another source, we might do that.
Thank you, Michael. And Christine, please.
Thanks. Yeah, point taken, and I see Lori put in the chat. That's also why they limited their survey to just trademark owners. I think that I think that, I know Greg has made this point multiple times, so I'm trying to be sensitive to the fact that as someone's going through this and if we're promising that it's going to take them 15 to 25 minutes, I don't know that having to reach out to an outside vendor and wait for information back is going to really be the best use of their 15 to 25 minutes, and we may get some attrition. We may have people not wanting to complete the survey if they have to reach out to an outside vendor. So I'm just trying to be mindful of that. I'm not going to argue this point at all. I just thought I would throw that out there for discussion. And if people think that we can get around that by just asking the brand owners themselves, then that's fine. And I know that people on this team have participated in surveys like that, and that's okay. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Christine. And I just note a couple things in the chat. Lori Shulman says this is why Intel limited the survey to TM owners and not outside counsel. Susan Payne says if we could see comments, if so, it would be good if the provider answers as if the owner, so they give location of owner and not their own location. And Lori Shulman notes the potential that vendors are in charge and we want to keep the cost down and there's a risk of redundancy. And Christine says, yes, Susan, that's what I meant. Stacey, do you have any questions about about this particular aspect? And I see, but first, I see Michael, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Michael Graham for the record. And I guess it's a question for Stacey. I do not recall, and we may have been told previously, how the universe of potential survey takers is going to be identified and selected for this particular questionnaire. I think that might answer part of our concerns.
Thank you. That's a good point, Michael. Stacey, any guidance there that you can provide?
I believe for this group, we'll be working with ICANN to make outreach to trademark holders, and that will be the case for all the respondent groups other than potential domain registrants, where we'll be relying on the online survey panels that ResearchNow SSI has.
Thank you, Stacey. And I see Michael, Christine, and Kathy, please.
It's Michael. I've taken down my hand. Sorry.
Thank you. Christine, please.
Thank you. This is Christine. I think that's part of my concern is that if the survey relies upon ICANN reaching out to, for instance, the intellectual property constituency, most of the people in the intellectual property constituency are outside counsel, have various clients that we may or may not know who they are. They would be funneling these complaint clients if they're willing to do that or identify them. So that's my concern, is that these questions actually would go to outside counsel unless there's a way to find in-house counsel. Intel is uniquely positioned in that you tick a box, I'm inside or I'm outside, and so Intel can just easily say, oh, we're outside counsel or inside counsel, send it there. I think ICANN's going to have a little bit more of a struggle there. I think that's kind of where my point was coming from.
Thank you, Christine. Kathy, please.
Coming off mute. Can you hear me?
You're fairly faint from me, Kathy.
Sorry about that. But let me ask my question. This is to Stacey. Stacey, is there anywhere where we're going to be talking about the size of the company? How is it that small, medium, and large trademark owners will be surveyed on this? And that we'll have some kind of reflection of small, medium, and large, because we have questions to all three groups. And I haven't seen those, but I might have missed something. So let me ask. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. Stacey, please.
Thanks, Kathy. That is a great question. In this early section, we do have some questions about how many trademark registrations there are, and I think that's intended to be perhaps this question would benefit from clarification of where the trademarks are registered, but if there's another way that you would like to measure how large a company is, whether that's by annual profits or employee size or something else, that would be useful for us to know, and we can certainly include that in this introductory section so that they can be used to screen future questions further down in the survey.
Thank you, Stacey. Susan, and then Kathy, please.
Yeah, hi. I just put my hand up to kind of respond to Kathy's point, and I think it's a good one, but But I think that comes back to the previous question about how are we identifying the brand owners or how are we distributing this? Because we're not, unless we were picking specific companies and asking them, and I'm not suggesting we should, then whoever we're choosing as the distribution method is going to select the or may have an impact on the size of the company that responds. I'm not sure it necessarily matters, but something about the size of portfolio would give you a reasonable idea, probably, about the size of the company. But I'd mirror Christine's comment that 50 trademarks is not a big portfolio. I mean, relatively, lots of companies would have way more than 50 in their portfolio.
Thank you, Susan. Kathy, please.
Yeah, still on the muffled phone. Sorry, everybody. Stacey, may I suggest that you talk to Lori and Michael? INTA had some question, at least one question on this, and I don't remember how they phrased it, net revenues, gross revenues, but it was clearly a question or set of questions on this, and that what they've already done might be useful in phrasing for what we're trying to zero in on. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. That is a very good point. And we've taken note of that as an action, and Stacey, we're certainly happy to help facilitate that as well to provide any guidance. Lori says she'd have to look back at the survey. Lori, if you did have a chance to do that, that would be extremely helpful if there was any guidance that you could provide. We'll also note, we also have captured in the notes the issue of whether it's going to be outside counsel answering or brand owners and how those will be identified. I think we probably need to note a question that ICANN can work on with Stacey as far as how we are going to identify the target for the survey. And with respect to outside counsel or not, and then also then the question of whether or not we need a question that indicates whether or not this is the brand owner or outside counsel. Is there anything else on there's a couple of questions. I think that was mainly just question one and two, and then also starting to touch on question three, where we're talking about trademark registrations and how many. And I've seen there was some guidance in the chat, too, on that, and that's also where we could seek guidance on size from Lori as well. So anything else on 1, 2, 3A, 3 and 3A, before we get to 4, which is have you or your company recorded any of your registered trademarks with the Trademark Clearinghouse? I'm looking for hands, not seeing any hands. Anything on question 4? I think the changes that Michael suggested seem pretty straightforward.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Christine. This is Michael.
Thank you. This is Christine. My only flag on this is that I think that there are multiple questions underneath here that sort of can only be answered if you have recorded a trademark with the Trademark Clearinghouse, like have you participated in Sunrise? Have you submitted proof of use for the works? So when we're all done, I just thinking of making a note for the analysis group here, you may wish to go back and have a trigger so that the questions that don't apply, if you click no to this answer, don't show up. Again, with the not surveying the hell out of people, we might still want to know if they've filed UDRPs or if they've had problems because they didn't participate, et cetera. But there are tons of questions that are contingent upon did you participate, and so we might want to go back and trigger those to make the survey shorter for people that didn't actually put their marks in the clearinghouse. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. That's a great point. We'll make note of that. Michael, please.
Michael Graham for the record. And I think Christine has a great point. I had simply added in that if there was a no answer to whether or not a company had recorded, thank you for the correction of that wording, had recorded registered trademarks with the TMCH, that if the answer was no, that the study would terminate after the question of whether or not there was a particular reason for that. But I think Christine raises an interesting issue, which is even if there wasn't a recording, perhaps we would want to ask a question later in regard to whether or not companies filed a UDRP. However, my one concern with that is I think that that sort of question goes beyond the scope of what we were trying to ascertain through this survey, which was basically whether or not these particular types of RPMs are effective, if there are issues with them. So if we're now asking for someone to continue providing answers who has not participated in those, I think we're going beyond what we're trying to seek, and we're adding potentially a number of questions, Christine, in terms of clarification then and personal opinion as to why they did not register. So I would include the termination. I don't know that I would ask people who did not register or record with the TMCH other questions beyond why they did or did not register there. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. And I have Christine and then Rebecca, please.
Thanks. This is Christine. Yeah, I just wanted to clarify. I agree with Michael, actually. I just was saying I hadn't looked through to see if there were any additional questions. I just think we should, at the very end, when we're all done and we know what questions we're about to answer, if there are any that should still be answer trademark owners that did not participate in Sunrise, we need to go back, delete, not show them the ones for the people who participated and only show them for the ones that didn't. Only show questions that relate to people that didn't participate. It may be at the end of the day, all of our questions basically are for people who participated. But I just wanted to make sure that we didn't lose sight of that at the end of the day. That's my only point there. I wasn't trying to say that there should be a whole bunch of new questions, just because those that could be a totally different area. That was my only point. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Christine. I have Rebecca and Susan, please.
Rebecca Teschnet, thank you. So I actually, sorry, I'm trying to lower my hand and I'm failing. So I feel like, first of all, these are RPMs, so they are definitely important to us. I think it's worthwhile to ask some questions. In particular, my understanding is one of our questions is, are the right people using this, and if people are, for example, making a calculation like it's just going to be simpler for me to use the URS or the UDRP, that's actually a useful answer about the function the TMCH is serving. So I would definitely support having at least some questions in there designed to elicit that. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. Susan, please.
Hi. Yes, I put my hand up in relation to 4B. I'm not quite sure if we're on it yet. I don't know if that counts as part of 4. But so I can comment on the question I asked on 4B, or I can pause until we get to that. I just wasn't quite sure.
Okay, go ahead, Susan. They're somewhat related nonetheless.
Okay. All right. And I'm as I said in my comment in the Google Doc, and I'm kind of in two minds on this, but I wondered whether the group, and indeed whether Stacey, think it would be helpful for us to try and rather than have a completely open text field, to try to specify some of the likely reasons that we think people might give to encourage, them to sort of, just because we talked a lot on the previous calls about the drawbacks of open text fields. So I tried to come up with some possibilities that I just put there for consideration, really. But I'm uncertain whether we're sending people down a path if we do this or not. But I thought it might be helpful. If you didn't record your trademarks, why not? I wasn't aware of the TMCH, so I thought it was too expensive. I wasn't intending to make enough Sunrise registrations to feel that it was worthwhile, or, you know, I've already got a watching service, so I don't need the trademark claim, or just kind of, you know, new GTLDs just aren't important to me. So it really was a question for people's thoughts, because, as I say, I'm not wedded to the idea of it.
Thank you very much, Susan. And Michael, please.
Yeah, Michael Graham, for the record. I note Susan has put those some of those ticks in her comment, and I would agree that we ought to give those as some suggestions. I think the one that I would change perhaps is I rely on a watching service. I would maybe do I rely on a watching service or outside counsel, or make those two separate items, and then at the end of it, go ahead and have the other with an open text field. But I think suggesting those as possibilities, and if others can think of other great possibilities, that would be the reason for not recording. I think we should include those. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. And Mike, I don't know if we addressed this, but I'm just noting that there's a that you had a comment in the text at the a little further above Susan's, where you're asking, and I think it's relating to question four, I'm wondering whether it is at all useful to identify brand / trademark owners who do not own any registrations. I think not, but wanted to pose the question.
Right. Michael Graham, for the record. I had considered that, but then after thinking about it, I decided that, again, would be beyond the scope of what we're asking. And we could, you know, there are a lot of questions that all of us have, but I don't think it's appropriate for this survey, and I think it would bog down things since we're, again, looking at this particular reason why trademark owners use or don't use, or what their experience is with the RPMs. I think going out on the limb to why did you or did you not register your trademark just opens up a whole nother avenue of questions that one would be interesting and great to know, but two, I think would make this a unlikely to be completed survey. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. And Kathy, please go ahead.
This is Kathy, still on the muffled phone. And Michael said some of it, but I wanted to check with Stacey and just check in. Stacey, we're talking about an array of different strategies for trademark and brand protection. And I just wanted to see if kind of the whole milieu of what we're talking about is making sense, if you have any questions, because I know we've dived into the weeds, whether it's URS and UDRP, Mark Monitor and Watching Services. I'm sure you're familiar with all of this, but kind of that throwing open the net more broadly than kind of the specific questions we have in front of us as part of that trademark strategy. I just want to see if this is all making sense to you and if you have any questions as we go through.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you, Kathy. Oh. Go ahead, Stacey. Sorry.
Thank you. Sorry. This is Stacey. Thank you. Yes, so far, all of the terminology that you've been using, I am familiar with, so I am following the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Then, Kathy, you still have your hand up? Is that old or new? I'm not hearing you, Kathy, if you're speaking. And let me ask if there are any other things that people want to say with respect to 4A and B. And if not, perhaps we can move along to question 5. And I'm trying to bring up those comments. And on question 5, the highlighted part is, in order to take part in Sunrise Services, and Christine asked, do we want to suggest why? Some might have submitted proof of use to participate in URS. Do we care? If we don't care why, perhaps we should change this to e.g. to participate in Sunrise URS or other services. Folks, have any thoughts? Kathy, I see your hand is up. I'm not hearing you, Kathy. Susan, please go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, I hadn't seen Christine's comment, so it took me a while to work out what that was about. Yes, I completely agree with that, because actually I think, you know, I know from client feedback that I've had personally that some of our clients put marks in the TMCH not because of the sunrise, but because they wanted to use some other service. So I think we should be a little less prescriptive in this question.
Thank you, Susan. And then I see a comment from you asking, would an if not, why not question be useful, either open text or another tick all that apply? And then you've got some suggestions there. Does anybody have any thoughts about Susan's suggestions in the Google Doc? Michael, please go ahead.
Yes, Michael. I'm looking at this, and there are a couple questions. One was to include a why not, and I agree with that, and I think it's probably best to put that with this question. And then to give, again, those possibilities, I think that would be really helpful, what Susan's suggesting. I haven't had a chance.
I'm sorry, cut out. I'm sorry, cut out, Michael.
Yeah, I was just looking at Susan's, what she's put there as draft ticks. I think those would be fine. There might be some wording changes in that, but I think those are good general categories to include. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Michael. And then next comment, I think it's Q4A, but I think it's meant to be Q5A. How many trademarks have you submitted proof of use for in order to take part in Sunrise Services, multiple choice? And Christine is noting no one taking the survey is likely to know this unless they look up their TMCH record, which is a giant pain, and they may not even have the agent for their TMCH record. I suggest reframing as a percentage of or most all from. And actually, I see your hand is up, Christine, and then Susan.
Thanks. This is Christine for the record. This is really sort of a background or historical context for Stacey and Greg. And I don't know if we came up with this list of numbers or if this was just a suggestion, but it kind of, you'll see this comment from me throughout. So if you think about it, first you have a trademark portfolio. Let's go with 1,000 domain names in a small-sized company's portfolio. They have international marks. They have logos. They have words. Of those, they have to decide how many word marks they can enter into the clearinghouse. Of those, they have to decide how many of those they're going to submit proof of use for in order to participate in Sunrise, because of those, they have to decide how many are going to be Sunrise registrations. So really, you're asking people to kind of nickel and dime by these tiny little like bands. For some of the questions, I think we need to make the bands bigger to correlate to general portfolio sizes, and I think that's where Laurie and Inta can really come in and give us some good suggestions on 4 good band chunks. I would suggest that anything under 10 is extremely tiny, and so having a band from 1, 2 to 5, and 6 to 10 is useless. And then, of course, you're going to have giant companies with thousands or hundreds of thousands of marks. So that, you know, 50-plus captures a whole slew of sizes of companies, including, by the way, very small companies that have portfolios of 50 or more. So then when you think about of that, you've participated in Sunrise or the Clearinghouse or any of the other systems, I'm suggesting that we might want to talk about either average percentages, lumped percentages, or I'm suggesting some, most, all, many, you know, some bigger group that allows people to give you a sense of, you know, of my, you know, 1,500 trademarks, you know, I decided I was going to put all of them in. Or of the big chunk percentage, I put 10% of my marks into the clearinghouse, and of those, you know, half I submitted proof of use for. Trying to give you some sort of ideas of scale of what a company might choose to do with this data as they put it into the clearinghouse and as they decide what to do with it, to help the group come to a better idea of what the bands here should look like on these various questions. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much. And I, since you referenced Lori, I know the order says Susan, Michael, Lori, but if folks don't mind, maybe I could ask Lori to speak first. Lori, please.
Hi. I just wanted to emphasize, and again, I don't have perfectly clear memory. It's been a while. But I'm almost certain that we segmented along business volume and not portfolio size. It's very dangerous to equate portfolio size with business volume. Exactly, because larger portfolios are not necessarily owned by larger businesses. Sometimes larger businesses depend on, particularly in common law countries, on fame more than a necessarily robust portfolio. It really depends. So I can't emphasize this enough. If you really want to look at, believe it or not, size doesn't matter in terms of portfolio. Now, if we decide philosophically it does because we want to know what percentage of a portfolio has been registered in the TMCH, that might matter. But then again, I will say from experience, the best practices from almost every brand owner I can think of has been to put maybe two of the three highest values or the most counterfeited, or there's criteria for putting a few marks in the TMCH. I think you'd be very surprised to find that you're not having owners putting in dozens of marks. It's just not how the best practice has been defined, at least to date.
Thank you, Lori. I have Susan and then Michael.
Yes, hi. We are on question 5A, I'm hoping. So this is the one about how many did proof of use get submitted for? I hope that's right. And assuming that I am right, I agree with Christine's comments, and I sort of scribbled a response to her to that effect in the Google Doc. My recollection, and I might be wrong, but my recollection from the staff report that they did a couple of years ago now, or perhaps a bit longer, and from the review of the Trademark Clearinghouse that Analysis Group did, was the vast majority of marks that have been put in the Trademark Clearinghouse actually also had proof of use. I mean, it's not 100%, but it's a really high percentage. So in a way, the outright numbers are not really very relevant here, and I thought Christine's suggestion of kind of most, some, all was much more relevant, and probably, you know, many, many people responding to this would just, you know, will tick an all box. Because if they went to the trouble of putting their mark in the TMCH, they would also have gone to the trouble of putting in the proof of use.
Thank you very much, Susan. Can I have Michael, please?
Thanks. It's Michael for the record. As to Lori, portfolio size, not business size, I think that's correct, but I think the questions are looking at portfolio size and then also the size or the number of recordations that you have. So I would keep with that. I wouldn't confuse it with business size. Again, I think we're getting way into some other interesting weeds. It may be a requirement for proof, and there might be an entrance question on size of business, but I'll leave that for other discussion. In terms of some, most, or all, or as Christina said, the difficulty of giving a number, there's no difficulty for us giving a number. And if I don't have it on the top of my head, my service providers do. All I have to do is give them a quick email and they will tell me. And I think some, most, all does not give me the sort of metrics, the sort of information that we are looking for, and is subject to, you know, various understandings. So I would keep these numeric values that we're asking for. I do agree with Christine that we need to change those brackets to make them more reflective of what's out there, maybe 1 to 10, 10 to 100, whatever they might be. And Lori, certainly INTA can provide some information on that, and I'd ask her if INTA may have some brackets that they've developed over time. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. Susan, please.
Okay, thanks, Michael. In which case, then, maybe is it wise for us to go with percentages? Because we've already asked these people how many marks they've shoved in the Trademark Clearinghouse. And so then, all we're really trying to get a feel for is the extent to which, having put it in the clearinghouse, they've then also done the proof of use. Isn't that right? And so maybe some most all is a bit too vague. But then wouldn't it, you know, maybe would we not be better with doing something like, you know, up to 30%, up to, you know, up to 50, I don't, you know, or, you know, up to 75, up to all, or, you know, up to 100 or something. Because, again, you know, I don't know what every single company did, obviously, but I know from speaking to my colleagues in Comlare that hardly any of our clients didn't put proof of use in. If they went to the trouble of putting the mark in there at all, I mean.
Thank you, Susan. Michael, please.
Yeah, I guess I'm not sure what changing that addresses. If I'm giving them a percentage, now I still need the same two numbers that I'm asking them for. And that very well may be the case that people who have registered in the TMCH are also submitting proofs of use. If that's the case, we'll find that out. But I think I would rather ask the question and have the figures. You know, percentages lie just as much as some, most all. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm still seeing Susan stand up. Susan, that in your hand?
I think it's due to my failure to put it down, but I suppose I'm conscious that we don't want to make this unduly onerous, and I guess I just think, you know, like allowing someone to say up to 75% gives them, you know, gives them the ability to kind of put a finger in the air. I know it's a less certain answer, but I'm just not sure how really relevant it is to know that you know, X company put in 31 and you know, that's all. I don't know. I mean, I guess we need to move on. I'm not going to die in a ditch over it, but I think maybe it's just making it a bit easier for people to answer.
Thank you, Susan. So, we've got opinions both ways here. Maybe as you suggest, perhaps we should just move on from this. Let's put a pin in it, though. Right now, perhaps we'll leave it as is, we'll just make a note that there are some concerns about it and perhaps move to the next question. The next question, question six. Have you applied to register any domain names matching any of your trademarks during a new GTLD, during a sunrise period? And then 6A actually has some comments. I see Susan says it's drafted. I think it might be answered as to how many PMs were relied on for Sunrise, i.e. you might only use one trademark but register 100 domains and you would only answer one. I think we want to know how many domains overall, don't we? If so, we need to amend to reflect my suggested edit question 6. And Christine's comment also on the numbering, again, I suspect most medium-large companies won't know, and I think the bands are too narrow still. And Michael, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I just posted a comment in response to Christine. I think in this regard, with very few exceptions, I think these bands are probably appropriate. I point out we have at Expedia thousands of registered trademarks, but I only have a few trademark clearinghouse recordations, and that's reflective of the fact that I register around the world, I register in various classes, but still Expedia is only one trademark. So I think these bands probably are appropriate, although Susan might know if there are companies with far more than 50 TMCH recordations. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. Christine, please.
Hi, this is Christine. Maybe this is the point of the problem, but question 6, I don't believe, is asking how many trademarks you've recorded. I think that question 6 is asking how many domain names you registered in Sunrise, as a result of the trademarks you've recorded. So if it's 1,000 domain names in its portfolio, or 1,000 trademarks in its portfolio, and it chose to register 10 of them in the clearinghouse, how many of those 10, well, there's two different sides to the question, and I think that's where the confusion is. How many of those 10 recorded marks were used to register domain names during sunray periods? And the other question, I think this is what we're trying to get at for question 6A, is how many domain names did you register? So for Sunrise Record Number 1, did you register 10 domain names? I mean, there were 1,000 sunrises. So did you register in 1,000 sunrise periods? Did you use it 1,000 times? Did you use it 5 times? Did you pick and choose how many times? How did you pick and choose? I think that's what we're going with on question 6, because it's talking about participating in sunrise period. That's this category. And the way you participate in a sunrise period is you take a trademark you've already recorded, and you then go register a domain name with it. So if we're going to ask a question about how many trademarks are in the clearinghouse, that should go into a different section as far as how did you participate in the clearinghouse. But this section is about how did you participate in Sunrise, which to me says how many domain names did you register using those marks in the clearinghouse. So I think that's the problem with the wording in question 6. So I, as Amazon, I might have only one mark in the clearinghouse, but I might have registered, 900 domain names. And I think that's what we're trying to get at here, but I could be wrong.
Thank you, Christine. Susan, please.
Yeah, thanks. Yes, I think we might be asking amongst ourselves, we might be having different interpretations of this question. And I'm interpreting it the same way Christine is, as in, I think what we're trying to get to here is how many domains did you register during a sunrise period? And that could be, as Christine says, it might be one of your trademarks in lots of different registries, or you might have 10 trademarks and you might have done 10 you might have registered domains matching all 10 of them, but only in 10 registries. But the answer, would still be 100. And I think that's what we're trying to get to is, you bought 100 domains, or you bought 10 domains, or you bought one domain. But I think looking at what Michael's been commenting, I think he's looking at this as how many TLDs did you get, did you buy domains in? And those are different questions. We need to know which question we're asking, because it impacts the band. But in terms of whether it's easy or not to know the answer to the question, I do think it's easy. I think the people who within a company are responsible for registering the domain name probably have a very good idea of how many they bought during sunrise periods. And it wouldn't be that difficult to look it up. So I do think it's something that can be answered. I think we need to be clear amongst ourselves which question we're asking.
Thank you, Susan. Michael, please.
Yeah, I was just going to pause it out there. Who would be able to provide perhaps some more appropriate bands for this? And I agree. I'll revise what I was reading this as and go along with Christine and Susan, I think, in context. That is the way we're looking at it. I think the only thing I would ask is if there's someone on this call who would be appropriate to provide some bands. I don't know that Stacy and Greg would be able to, but Susan, if you would have, some better idea based on your customers, that would be great. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. And just a few comments in the chat that might be worth bringing out. Christine said there should be a 500 plus. And we should consider if the brand owner will amalgamate them for one mark, a brand owner might register DMs and 200 sunrises, and for a different mark might register DMs and 200 different sunrises. So that's two marks, 400 different sunrises. So what would that brand owner answer? Just seeing 200 max DMs for mark one and 400 max DMs total. And Susan says, I can have a think about this. So, yes, if there are folks on the call who can give some guidance to Stacy and Greg on what these bands should be, that would be very helpful. We're capturing that as an action item. Thank you. And then
let us go to question 7. And I see that there's some comments with respect to question 7. We have from Susan, the factors taken into account may be different for different domains registered, e.g. some for use, some because they match an important location or relevant goods services, some because of the risk of fraud. So someone might tick all, most of these, but that doesn't really tell us what the important factors are. Does that matter? And let me just see, there's another comment as well. Can we just make this change throughout, please? Register. Yeah, I think record as opposed to register, I think perhaps is what you're referencing, Susan. So question 7, any further comments? Not seeing any hands up. It seems clear what Susan is suggesting. Any questions, Stacey? Stacey, go ahead.
Thank you. This is Stacey. I don't have any questions. Thank you for providing these options.
Susan, go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I just wanted to try and give a bit more clarification to my comment. I mean, I guess this is one, again, that maybe is for us to consider or for Stacey to comment on or to consider when she comes back to the document. But I just wasn't sure how we would, you know, as it's currently set out, I just wasn't sure how we were going to capture that there might be different reasons. And I also, you know, wasn't sure if it matters. But we could just literally, you know, we may just get people who take every single one of those because in relation to different names, different ones of these apply. And I don't know how. It doesn't seem to me like that's terribly helpful. So, I'm afraid I don't have any suggestions on how to address it. I'm hoping that someone who's more expert on surveys could make some suggestions.
Thank you, Susan. Michael, please.
Yeah, Susan has a – Michael, for the record, Susan has a great point there, but I just inserted something. I mean, again, the question that we would like to ask would be with each of those, but you know, in the aggregate, I don't think that gives us any greater indication than asking someone to provide this, and it may cover, you know, they may tick all of the answers. As we go along, that may mean that, you know, it's indeterminate whether or not there's a specific factor that outweighs the others, and that would be the finding. I can't think of a way that you would get to that real nuts and bolts information, Susan, other than asking for each of the domain names recorded with the Trademark Clearinghouse and for which a proof of use has been filed to answer this question. And I think you and I know that's never going to happen. We're not going to get that information. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. Christine, please.
Thanks. This is Christine. Yeah, Susan put my suggestion in the chat about ranking them, and I noticed throughout they talk about this Likert scale, most likely, least likely, less likely. I like the idea of saying, you know, and addressing the aggregate issue, because remember, we're going to try to find a way to gather, entity size at the beginning. Right? So, yeah, if you've got a giant company like Amazon, we might have to tick every box, because for a giant portfolio of trademarks, you know, every single contingency is going to be a factor, and that's going to be useless. But what if somebody shows up as a smaller medium entity? Maybe they've really only got 3 primary reasons why they participated. And I think we're going to find that out. I have a suspicion here that very large entities with very large portfolios will have a lot of reasons, and entities with much smaller portfolios will have fewer reasons. And those who only chose to register one in the clearinghouse and apply for one domain names, we'll have only one reason. They probably won't have 50 reasons. And if Michael's theory is correct, that most people only registered a couple in a couple of TLDs, then I don't think you're going to have, you know, everybody checking 10 boxes here. So, yep, I think there will be some clutter for large portfolios. I suspect there won't be as much clutter for small portfolios, and some of that will come out for those. But I do like the idea of learning more about this Likert scale and figuring out, can we have them drag a slider as to how, you know, how much of an impact each of these factors was on their decision-making when considering their Sunrise portfolio in the aggregate. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Christine. And Michael, please.
Oh, sorry, old hand, but I agree with Christine, and I think the idea not of ranking them against each other, but ranking their importance or indicating their importance of each of these factors in the consideration would be a great way if we can obtain that. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. And Stacey, a question for you then. You know, mentioning the Likert scale or, you know, the discussion here of ranking them in comparison to each other, do you have any suggestions about how, you know, from the survey point of view, we'd be able to facilitate that type of answer?
Yes, this is Stacey. Yes, based on the conversation, I do think that a Likert scale is, has begun to be suggested. It does sound like a great way to be able to collect this kind of information. The difference between the two options of ranking the options against each other versus having a Likert scale option for each is that if you do a numeric ranking of all of the options, you won't be able to tell the relative importance of each. So, for example, say the first two options, trademark is a core business brand and new GTLD relates to businesses, goods, or services, are both very important to the respondent. They won't necessarily be able to rank those both number one. One will have to be chosen as a number two. And then when we collect that data, we won't be able to tell. And similarly, suppose one respondent deems all of these very important and they rank them in order of importance. However, if you were to ask them how important are these, they would all be towards the very important side of the spectrum versus someone who, for whatever reason, doesn't think any of these reasons are important, we wouldn't be able to tell a difference between those kinds of respondents. So a Likert scale would allow us to collect a little bit more dimension.
Thank you, Stacey. And I noticed a couple questions in the chat from Kathy. So we talked about adding availability of UDRP and URS as part of the thought processes on this question. And Christine says, I added it as a suggestion on the document. And Ariel is just noting that the cache for the notes is full. That does not mean we're not taking notes. It just means that we're taking them offline. And so you have a couple folks typing. So that seems to be that we're ready to move on. Yes, note-taking skills award goes to Ariel. So that perhaps takes us to question eight. And I'm seeing a comment on question eight from Christine. We might want to ask in how many instances in 1,000 sunrises you didn't participate in N because of price or some other factor like not interested or ineligible. Any comments on Christine's suggestion? Hi, Christine, go ahead, please.
Thanks. This is Christine. I just wanted to clarify for Stacey's benefit here. So what I was really getting at here is we want to know, did price affect your decision to seek Sunrise period registrations for any of your trademarks? My concern here, of course, is if we say yes, it very much, you know, was a consideration. With the 1,000 Sunrise period, it's very unlikely that it affected your decisions in all of those Sunrise periods. There were probably, as the list above, right, there's a giant list of why you might participate in Sunrise. There's also an equally giant list of why you might not, and price is one of those. We want to dive into price here, so we have a lot of questions about price. But I want to, as you're thinking about this grid and how you're going to map your Likert scale, we don't want to make it appear that if someone said, I didn't participate due to price, and I had 50 trademarks, that somehow we say 50 people didn't participate because price was such a big issue when we have 1,000 sunrises. So as we're sort of, you're getting your logistics on this matrix or this grid, we need to get at the fundamental core of, was price a factor for some of your TLDs? Was it a big factor? Was it a lot of a factor? Was, you know, I think that's what we want to get at. So I'm just trying to provide a little background context as we're talking through some of these price questions. I know that a couple of places Greg had suggested maybe minimizing these questions, but price is pretty important to this group. And so to the extent that we can come up with some sort of a grid or a matrix to really get at how significant price was and how big of an issue it was. I mean, across 1,000 TLDs, if there were five for whom price was a giant problem, we want to know that. But we also want to know that it was really only five out of 1,000. You know, so to the extent that we can get at that information, that would be immensely helpful to Stacey and Greg. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. And Stacey, do you have any comments or questions with respect to that suggestion?
Thanks. This is Stacey. I don't think I have any questions. It Christine, based on what you just said, it does sound like converting this question similarly to a Likert scale of how important was price in your decision, or a multiple choice that would be how frequently of the sunrise periods that you considered registering in was price the reason, the final reason that you chose to participate or not. That's not worded very well at all. But those are the two questions that I think I'm hearing from you. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think so. Thanks a lot. I think you're on the right track. My goal here really isn't to necessarily wordsmith it, because I think you guys are the experts on that, but it was just to provide you with some of that background so that when you sit down to figure out what that scale looks like, you can keep in mind sort of what we're trying to really try to pull out of the survey risk things.
Thank you, Christine. And I don't know if this is, I think it's related to what you've been saying now, but with question 8B, and I didn't register my domain name, and you're noting that this answer is odd. You can decide not to register in the expensive TLD, but we don't want to ensure not registering at all in any TLD was because of the TLD sunrise price. Now, we were talking about the grid and so on. Do we need to talk more about this particular comment? And I apologize if I'm being obtuse. Christine, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Christine. I'm happy to dive into it. I think given what I've just said, I think it's probably pretty self-explanatory now, especially given that I remade my example below. But if Stacey has further questions about it, I'm happy to answer, you know, any questions that I might have been thinking about it.
Oh, thank you so much, Christine. And Stacey, do you have any further questions? Or with all the discussion we've had here, is this clear enough?
Thank you. This is Stacey. Yes, I think I understand. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much. And so on to question 9. I see that question 9 has all good up with a comment from Susan. Do we need this as well as question 8? If so, the sub-question options need more precision. You can answer yes to price impacting decision both if it's very high and if it's very low, but the impact of the two is likely to be quite different. And Susan, please.
Yes, sorry. I'm finding it a bit difficult to work this Google Doc and work out where the comments are. Can I just say, the reason I put my hand up was that there's quite a lot of change happening in this Google Doc in sections that we've been through, sort of, we've been going through the section and then someone is going in behind and changing stuff. And I'm just a bit concerned that there's amendments happening which we aren't looking at and we may not realize they're being made. I don't know if people think, you know, perhaps it would be more helpful if we kind of keep the Google Doc as it currently exists, at least for the purposes of the call. I'm not trying to be really prescriptive, but I just, I don't know. I'm certainly finding it a bit
a bit challenging to see that text is being amended as we're trying to talk about it, or even sort of after we've talked about it, you know, and moved on to the next question.
Thank you, Susan. Yes, I think that that could make things confusing. Kathy, I see you have your hand up.
Yeah, this is Kathy, multitasking because these meetings came in as other meetings already scheduled. But I think what Susan may be referring to is the same theme of UDRP and URS, that as we're looking at why, and that's why I didn't think there was any problem putting it in the chat as well as putting it in the document, because it's the same theme. But so Q7, what factors have you considered in deciding whether to register a domain name matching your trademark during any sunrise period? And the factor that you could consider could be avoiding the UDRP, or it could be that you decided not to register because of the opportunity to use the UDRP in the URS should a dispute arise. So I added that to Q7, pending people's review. Also in the table, same kind of issue. If when we're looking, you know, when someone's going through that calculus, so Q8B, in the new GTLDs, that you decided not to seek sunrise period registration due to price, which of the following did you do? I waited till general availability. I didn't register my domain name. I registered it in a different new GTLD. And then, Susan, sorry, I should say, I'm just multitasking too much. I used or kept as an option to use the UDRP and the URS for dispute resolution. So I would think that that's kind of also part of that calculus of the whole thing, but I will pause and, you know, for questions and see what people think. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy, Christine, and then Susan, please.
Hi, thanks. This is Christine. I'd lost Adobe and now I had to reconnect my audio. Okay. This is Christine, and I actually disagree with Kathy. In this case, the specific, and I not that those aren't issues. I agree that they are considerations. But in this section, again, we're going to get into too much of the weeds with the brand owners, but this is, did you participate in Sunrise? And what are the factors you considered if you were going to apply for a domain name? And you don't get an opportunity to participate in UDRP if you apply for a domain name. You always have that opportunity. So that's why I put in there originally, and I apologize for making that change, trying to avoid a UDRP. You would register a domain name in Sunrise because you didn't want to have to deal with the UDRP later. Not an opportunity to use. That exists regardless of whether you participate in Sunrise or not. So I think that is not the correct wording here, and I think maybe this is why Susan was concerned about additions, because we don't have a chance to vet these if we add them after the fact. And then same thing with if price affects your decision. The price of a Sunrise registration would never affect your decision to keep UDRP as an option. Price will only affect your decision if you want to register a domain name in a Sunrise period. Now, you might balance, is the price of a Sunrise, you know, affected, you know, balanced against the cost of a UDRP or a URS. That might be an option, but I don't think it has to do with it being available as an option. So I'm a little bit concerned about that. I think that to the new question, is it 8B now, the matrix? I think the point is that we're asking Stacy and Greg to go back and kind of make a new matrix. So I hesitate to go through and add elements to the matrix that are going to be just kind of extenuating balance questions that we're going to ask later, because we are going to ask later about how, you know, the availability of UDRP and URS, I think, affected, you know, people's decisions to participate at all. So I'm not sure that they apply here. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Susan, please.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, Christine has expressed my concern much better than I managed to do. So shall I move on now to question 9, which is the thing that you thought I was going to respond on?
I think we're still on question 7 and question 8. This is Kathy.
Are we still? If we are, then I will pause.
Go ahead. I thought we were moving to 9, and I thought we don't have agreement to add the material that, Kathy, that you have put in. So I don't know if you want to speak to that, but otherwise I think we're poised to move on to 9.
Yeah, I'd like to just because I think these questions lend themselves to various interpretations. So, again, for Q7, what factors have you considered in deciding whether to apply to register domain name matching? As Christine said, price is an issue, and if the price of the Sunrise is higher than the price of a UDRP or URS, that may well be part of the calculus here, and ditto for Q8B. So I think we're missing something if we don't add this into the calculus, because it is part, you know, it is exactly what Christine said, something, and I know I'm coming to a different conclusion, Christine, but it is exactly the calculus of, you know, price. Any company is going to be dealing with price as part of the calculus, so I think we have to put it in. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. I do think that Christine, and not to put words in her mouth, let's say that it is actually addressed someplace else, and that maybe more appropriately someplace else. And I'm just, I see, Susan, you have your hand up. Is that an old hand? But I see Christine's hand is back up as well. I'll go to Christine, because I think your point is maybe to this.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, this is Christine. Yeah, I do want to, we can skip ahead and look at UDRP and URS. I'm not disagreeing, Kathy. I think I do understand that there's a big balance for pricing and all the factors that go into it, but I think calling out UDRP and URS is dangerous unless we do the same thing as did on Q7, which is come up with all of the various balancing tests with respect to price, because price per the strict price of the Sunrise period is going to be balanced against the value of the trademark. It's going to be balanced against the, you know, the cost of the UDRP and URS, and it's going to be balanced against the cost of litigation if need be. It's going to be balanced against multiple costs, the cost of people to go in and manually watch this and add it to your watch list that various trademark owners have. So, I mean, I do understand the point of UDRP and URS, but if you're going to open the can of worms on all of the different costs and factors that go into a trademark owner's decision as to what affected their pricing determination, we could be here all day. And so I think we're trying to keep it slightly high level to say, did price affect your decision? We don't necessarily want to know what aspects of price affected your decision, and if we do, we probably need to schedule another call. But then we want to know if you thought it was too expensive for any of your business reasons that you have, what did you do afterwards? Did you wait for general availability to get it? Did you just say, screw that TLD, I'm not even participating, I'm going to find a different TLD, you know, some other option? And you know, what did you decide to do instead? And maybe, and that's a situation in which you would say, and maybe that's where you're going with this, is you know, I decided to keep my other options open, you know, such as litigation, UDRP, URS, I don't know. But I want to be really careful that we don't start guessing all the different pricing variables that a business would go into here. Thanks.
Thank you. And I'll just note that was the original scope of the question. There was not a question relating to UDRP, URS, you know, in this particular section. So I'm going to go back to Susan. And Susan, I know we have a comment of yours on number 9, and I think you were planning to address that.
Yes, thank you. Yes, so on question 9, the first part of it is, did price affect your ability to seek Sunrise registration? But if you go back to question 8, there's a question, did price affect your decision to seek Sunrise? And really, I just wasn't sure that we needed both of them. I'm happy to defer to the group if they think that elicits something really usefully different, but I wasn't sure that we needed both. However, if we did have both, my point was that in question 9, price might well affect your ability to seek a Sunrise registration, but that could be because the price is really high or because the price is really low. So assuming I'm answering this and I think, yes, the price was really low, so that made me much more able to get a Sunrise registration, then when I get onto Q9A, it's now made it much more likely that I'll register a Sunrise registration. But if I'm answering this, you know, wearing a hat where I'm thinking, yes, the price is too high, and therefore that made it more difficult for me, then, you know, in both cases I'm saying it affected my ability, but I'm answering Q9A in diametrically opposed ways. That was what I was trying to say. I hope that makes sense.
Thank you, Susan. And Michael, please.
I may actually put my hand down. I think Susan raises a good point. I was reading this as really going after primarily on the negative side, but I think it could be viewed in both ways. I think it's also a different question, though, whether it had to do with the effect of the pricing, where here is the ability. I'm not quite sure what to do with it. I like the question. But again, I was reading it more as a negative and looking at whether or not there was an adverse effect from the pricing.
Thank you, Michael. So it sounds like we could have two questions here at the two different aspects. I'm just wondering what guidance we want to try to give to Stacey and Greg, if we know. And if we don't. So help Christine. And I know also, Christine, that you do need to leave in about 10 minutes. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Yeah, this is Christine. And I'm sorry, maybe I didn't understand you, Michael, but I think we're in agreement that basically we can smush 8 and 9 together. It looks like Kathy is probably in agreement as well in the chat. Did a price affect your ability? And that can really go to affect your decision or your ability, either one. I support merging them together unless there's something. Kathy likes my word smush. I like to create new vocabulary. And unless we've all missed something, Michael, maybe you could re-explain. But I think we can smush 8 and 9 together. Thanks.
Thanks. We've noted that technical term. Christine. And so Tim, let's move to Tim.
Yeah, this is Lori. I'm sorry. I support smushing.
Yeah, go ahead.
I got kicked out of Adobe, so I'm on audio only, and I'm following the questions just out of word. I agree with the smush technique.
Thank you, Lori. That's very helpful. On question 10, we have a comment from Susan. Do we want information about pricing? And we already know that registries and registrars are unlikely to give us this, whereas brand owners might do. What we want is some way to elicit what brand owners were paying or being asked to pay during the sunrises compared to what they or anyone else would have charged after the sunrise. Any comments? Please go ahead, Susan.
Yes, thank you. And again, this is one where it's I'm willing to defer to Greg and Stacey in terms of how to draft this to elicit what I think we were trying to get. But what I was really just trying to say was that, I think this is information, that particular sort of pricing type information is something we do want. And I do respectfully disagree with Christine's comment where she says that she thinks many brand owners can't answer that. I think they can. I think there might be, as we talked about in some of the previous questions, there might be some outliers who registered so many that they just don't have a handle on it. But I also think that there are many won't be in that situation. And even those who registered a lot of names, when someone said to you, it's going to be $10,000 to you in your sunrise, take it or leave it, I think you remember that. I'm pretty sure you do. And if you don't, then the registrar that you worked with who dealt with that pricing outrage will remember it. So I agree with Christine's suggestion that maybe we need to make this sort of optional so that people don't get hung up on it if they can't answer it. But I think people can answer it.
Thank you, Susan. I have Christine and then Michael, please.
Thanks. This is Christine. Yeah, I understand Susan's point on this. Maybe I'm being too literal with the wording here. And I do like the idea of saying, you know, we have three follow-up questions in which we're seeking detailed information about the prices you were charged. If you're willing, you know, click here if you don't want information with us and move along. But then, you know, we would really appreciate if you would, something like that, because I'm looking at it very literally. In Q10, in what new GTLDs, if any, did you decide to seek a Sunrise period registration? Okay, so I sought, I'm going to just use this as an example, 200 Sunrise period registrations. I went to go try. I instructed my registrar. I was told pricing for all 200. Of those 200, if you're willing and recall, indicate the price you paid. So I have to come up with the 200 TLDs in which I decided to seek a Sunrise registration. That's Q10. I've got to list my 200. Then if I need to list the price I paid for each of those, right? That's going to be pretty hard to do without going and doing a whole bunch of homework. So then how many did you decide not to seek a Sunrise registration due to price? That's going to be easier, especially if there's a $10,000 mark. But what if my company has a cutoff at, well, we don't want to pay more than $300? So now I've got to go back and look at that 200 Sunrise registrations and decide how many of them were cut off because of price reasons versus other reasons. And then what was that price? Agreed, if you've got a super egregious one, that's going to stick out as an outlier. But maybe I'm just being too picky with the way the question's worded, and maybe there's a way that we can take Susan's point of trying to get at this question. And since we're asking open-ended questions anyway, maybe we can honestly say, like, you know, tell us about the most egregious pricing situations you've had. I mean, just be straight up. You know, don't tell me all. Tell me about the ones that stuck out in your mind as the worst. And maybe that's you know, the best way to get at it, just a suggestion.
Thank you, Christine. Michael, please.
Yeah, I'm troubled by how we approach that as well. And it's sort of like if you're willing and recall what price you would have paid, well, I'm old enough in this group to remember when I would have paid $3, and that would get me any .com I wanted. But I think perhaps what we need to do is to approach it in the way that Christine was suggesting, of rather than trying to get the entire field of experience, pick out the ones that are, you know, are those that the respondents will remember, will be able to give us specific information on. And I don't think asking what would you pay for it is really a good question. It's so open-ended. What were you asked to pay for it that you felt was too much might be the better question. But I think we need to think about how to approach these two so we do get this information, which I think Susan's accurate. We do want this information, but of getting it in a way that's, one, going to be useful, and two, going to be something that will encourage respondents to respond and not just pass this question and not give the information. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. Stacey, do you have any questions with respect to some of this guidance and any ideas of you know, what we want to try to do with this question based on the comments and what you've heard here?
Thanks. This is Stacey. I do have just a few questions. I think I'm hearing some questions that sound to be in the vein of, you know, basically, is there a price above which a brand owner does not want to pay for a Sunrise registration? I don't know if that's the kind of, if that would rub anyone the wrong way or if that wouldn't be collecting the information you want. Otherwise, we could certainly alter the question along the lines of, you know, what is the most extreme or an example of an extreme price that you were unwilling to pay? In Susan's comment on the document, it sounds like there's a slightly different question there, which is, what is the difference between the Sunrise registration price and the general availability price? In this most recent discussion on the phone, I don't think that I've really heard that question come up again, so I'm wondering if we want all of that information, or if we are more interested in, you know, what's the Sunrise registration price that you were offered that you, you know, did not accept? I think either way is fine. I just wanted to make sure that I understood what the group wants.
Thank you, Stacey. I have Christine and then Susan, please.
Thanks. This is Christine. I'm going to be quick so I can jump to my other call and then let Susan pick up the flag on this. The price that a brand is willing to pay depends on the value of the brand. So some brands, they're willing to pay much, much more because the cost of defending it is so much higher versus some brands that they decide aren't quite as worth it. So asking it an absolute, like, what's the two, that was your top dollar, what price beyond which were you unwilling to pay, that's not going to be a good question. Asking for the anecdotes is a better question. I know I said horror story in the chat, but I don't think we want to say the word extreme because we want people to highlight anything that they think is worth telling, right? So we don't only want to hear about the $10,000 price, but if one company is a maybe small to medium-sized company and they were aghast at a $200 price, we want to hear about that. Maybe we're going to have 50 stories of companies that were aghast at a $200 price. I don't know. But I think if we say extreme, we might get people to say, well, I don't know that it was extreme because I was asked to pay that, you know, 20 times. So I think you want to be really careful about leaving this open-ended enough that you're trying to get at the stories of the outliers and maybe why it was an outlier to your company without limiting it too much. And I know Susan can speak to this. This is kind of sort of her expertise. Thanks all for everyone. One, I'm going to drop after this. Thanks. Oh, and to Kathy, it participates in the GTLD, or depends on the GTLD also. Absolutely right. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you Monday. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much, Christine.
Bye.
Have a great weekend.
Bye, Christine.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Lori. Can I jump into the queue?
Yes. Lori, you will go after Susan. So first Susan,
okay.
Then Lori. Thank you.
Thanks.
Oh, lovely. Thank you. Yes, and I was sort of, Christine's covered a lot of it, but I think I was thinking that some kind of reference back to what the general availability pricing is has a relevance because, and this may be what Kathy means by that it depends on the GTLD, because I'm trying to think of an example. I think Dot Secure or Luxury, I think it was. I think the base price for a luxury name was something really high, like, and I'm guessing here, $10,000. So, you know, if the base price for anyone is $10,000, then the fact that it was $10,000 in the Sunrise is like, you know, is you might be shocked and aghast at it, but that's the price for everyone. But if it's $10,000 to everyone else, but while you were trying to buy it in the Sunrise, it was $20,000, then that's a different issue, and I think that's the kind of issue that we're trying to tease out with our questions about pricing. As I'm saying again, you know, those were guesses on my part. They're not the actual pricing. I can't recall the actual pricing.
Thank you, Susan. Lori, please.
Hi. I guess I'm going to come back in and emphasize something that Christine and Susan are saying on both sides. The equation of whether you're a registrar that may be setting a price or a trademark attorney that's trying to figure out whether to pay a price. And this is what made forming these surveys so vexatious. So if you have suggestions, we'd be open. So on the registrar side, to Susan's point, there were some sunrises, notable sunrise periods where we know that the registrars were setting prices that were, if you were a trademark owner, you were actually charged more than if you were not, okay? That there was discriminating pricing within a single category of a sunrise purchase. So if you were a trademark owner in a sunrise purchase and asserting a right, you were charged one price. And in that same sunrise period, if you were not a trademark owner, you obviously couldn't buy it, but if the mark wasn't bought and went into free range, then you could buy it something very low. So there was this, you know, opportunism in the sunrise period that trademark owners found very difficult to cope with. Then on the other hand, you have trademark owners trying to decide, okay, where am I going to put my money on this $10,000 sunrise ask of trademark owners? If I have a mark that has been frequently counterfeited, as much as I hate that $10,000 price tag, maybe it is worth it for me because this brand's so important to me. Well, I would never pay that kind of money for maybe a different brand. So So both sides of this equation are trying, in a sense, to game the system, trying to maximize or minimize, depending on which side of the equation you're on, what price you're going to pay at what point. And what the task of the data subgroup and the RPM group in general is to find out, within these pricing mechanisms, has there been unfair competition? Has there been an unfair state of play? Has it deterred buyers from buying what they might otherwise have bought? Those are the sort of very broad outlines of the problems that we're trying to get at with these questions. And I think that the difficulties that we're having right now kind of reflect the complexity of some of the pricing that went on, particularly in the sunrise periods. So I, again, this is a contextual comment. I don't know how to solve the problem, but basically on both sides of this equation, you're going to have multiple factors. I don't know that you could say definitively, you know, price is the factor, not the factor, because it's going to always be weighed against, and I think Christine or Susan had mentioned that the cost of actually defending a trademark, let's say not inside the domain universe, but outside, going to a court, going to some administrative law procedure that may not be the UDRP or may be the UDRP, the cost of that versus buying something up front versus being a so-called emerging business little guy. But if you're a little guy and you're building a business on one brand and it's a brand that could be very easily counterfeited, then that maybe that $10,000 is exactly what you're going to spend. So this goes to my earlier point, too, about not, you know, thinking that calculating portfolio size and spend or business size are all going to align, because typically they don't, actually. I mean, I've worked in the private sector working for charities and Fortune 50s, and I can tell you on some charitable brands, more money is spent than in the Fortune 50. And, again, I don't know if this is helpful, but I, when I'm hearing my colleagues speak, what I'm really hearing is conflict that's playing out between all of these factors and why decisions that might have seemed more straightforward to a brand owner, when in fact they were not straightforward at all.
Thank you, Lori. Susan, you have your hand up. Or Susan, is that an old hand?
No, according to mine, I don't have my hand up, but maybe I'll raise and lower it again a couple of times and see what happens.
I will lower it for you. And, okay. All right. So, Stacey, based on all of that background and discussion, it sounds like, do you have a sense of changes that we are seeking for this question? It sounds like we're looking for some anecdotal information, but let me see if you've got questions. And let me let Stacey go first, and then Kathy, I do see your hand up.
Thanks, this is Stacey. Yes, I do agree. It's sounding like we're at the point where we're trying to get at complicated enough information that asking for anecdotal experiences may be the best option here.
Thank you. And Kathy, please.
I just added something, so I thought I'd flag it. Q11A, I think, but it's hard to see. Yeah, Q11A. If you are willing and recall, and I'm going to use it as edited, please indicate what price you would have paid, I want to say, in that GTLD, because you know, if you would to register your trademark during the sunrise period. If that's really what we're asking, is like how much would it have been worth to you, then I think it is, it might be GTLD relevant, so that, you know, somebody was talking about that luxury earlier, and if that's $10,000, that might be reasonable for Rolex, but in Dot Bike, my little local bike store that I love, the bike club, you know, $200, as somebody mentioned earlier, might be high for that. So this may be GTLD specific, so I thought I'd see if everyone agreed about putting that GTLD specific information into the question.
Thank you, Kathy. Does anybody have any objections to adding that change?
Not seeing any hands up. And I guess we go to question 12. We've got an edit in there, a couple edits in there. I'm not, 12 and 12A, I'm not seeing any comments on those. Does anybody have anything they want to raise? I'm looking for hands. Not seeing any hands. And I'm going to suggest that we go to question, there's question 12, I see there's question 12A, 12B, and 12C. I don't see any comments again associated with them, just some edits. 13 and 13A, I don't see any comments there. 14 has a comment. In the event a registry has placed terms in its reserved names list, Christine says this wording is way better than what we have in the registry's operator questions list. Okay. I don't want to be moving too quickly, but I'm not seeing any hands. So let's say question 15 has a comment. It's the same edit as question 14 above. Okay, that's from Susan. So we can carry over that edit from question 14. And question 16, that's some edits, but I see no comments. I see a comment in question 17, and that says duplication, question 6 and 12. And the question 12 is about trying and being unable to register. And Susan, please.
Yeah, I thought it'd be easier if I just speak to it. It's just that we, when I looked at this, I thought, I can't believe we've got this far in the survey and we haven't already asked, did you attempt to register any of your trademarks in a Sunrise? And so I looked back and it looked to me like we've already asked this, or sort of variations on this multiple times. Now, this might just be, it might just be the way it's drafted at the moment. You know, it might be that actually what needs to happen at this point is that we say to someone, you know, you previously said to us that you'd attempted to register your trademarks in the clearinghouse or whatever, you know, rather than kind of asking them about three different times whether they put their marks in the clearinghouse and attempted to register Sunrise registration. I felt we seem to be asking the same question more than once.
Thank you, Susan. That seems quite clear. So perhaps, Vicki, when you go back to look at those previous questions, perhaps we can economize. Goodness knows that if we can reduce the number of questions and avoid duplication, that would be helpful. So see if there is a way we can roll this back and not have it duplicating earlier questions. And Michael says, good reminder of Sunrise period registration in 18. Okay, so that is so that's in 18, saying to include the reminder of Sunrise period registration intro. In intro to 18. Okay, so we will note that in the notes. I'm not seeing any other comments on 18, but we do have a comment on 19. So the comment on 19 is we suggest dropping to reduce the length of the survey. What do people think about that suggestion? Dropping question 19.
This is Kathy. I agree. I think that's a good
suggestion. Susan, please.
And I disagree, as does Christine. This is one of the things that we were, you know, trying to elicit from doing this survey, and it was something that we'd all agreed we were going to be asking.
Thank you, Susan. Michael, please.
Yeah, and I'll agree with Susan. This was something that we were specifically going to ask, and it goes to a larger question that's before the RPM VDP. So I think this is worth asking and pursuing. Thanks.
Thank you. And I see Christine's comment also says this question goes to the effectiveness of Sunrise. And I see the edits in there from you, Michael. I'm not seeing any other comments. Do you want, for 19A, Michael, is there anything you feel you need to explain with those edits or otherwise add? And I see, Kathy, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought somebody recommended taking 19 out. I thought that was Michael recommending taking it out, but I could be missing that. And then I have another comment.
Actually, it was Greg from Analysis Group suggesting it. It wasn't a suggestion from the subteam.
I'm looking for, and maybe Michael can help me, I'm looking for this question in the original questions. Could you help me see that? Because it just seems massively leading to me the way it is. I don't recall this in its kind of current sense, current form.
And I see, Michael, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and look at that. The only reason why Greg was suggesting this was not subject matter, but was length of survey. And I did not see anyone questioning whether or not we should be asking this. And again, this was something we were going after. I'll have to look at the original questions to see what this correlates to. But this is something that apparently has been in there a while. I'll take a look.
It's been in our questions for a while? Our original questions?
Kathy, this is Julie. I do believe it is in the original questions. And I'm just looking for it now. Yes. Are you aware of any domains that contain strings that are identical or confusingly similar to any of your TMCH registered trademarks that were applied for after the Sunrise period? And I'm just looking at that. That is exactly the question that was in our original questions. If you look at page 16, question 5, it is 5 bullets.
That's
six bullet
in the narrative section, correct?
Yep.
Yeah.
And actually, I've synced the document so you can look at that page.
I'm there.
Okay.
But this idea of specific actions, legal actions that were taken, it's completely possible that something was identical. Confusingly similar is actually a legal term. We don't have that legal issue. But because it was a different TLD. So, but the implication here is that everything's a legal matter, and maybe Greg or Stacy can comment on this, but once we get down to the Q19AI, because of the wide range of GTLDs, I'm not sure any of these actions are appropriate, and we didn't suggest any of them. Can we leave this as a more open-ended question? Because the answer might be that the word Michele, to invoke Michele Nayon, Michele may be appropriate. Maybe trademark 10 times for 10 different types of things, including domain name registration services, but also for bicycles and other things. So I think we're leading here that whenever something looks like a trademark, that it's a legal issue. And I don't think we've made that conclusion as a subteam. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. I have Michael and then Susan, and I think I'll note that the additional text there that's been added, by Michael. Actually, I see Michael lowered his hand, but I see Susan. Please.
Yeah, this is Michael. Let me, since I had my hand up, and I did add these because I would not be averse to just having an open-ended, but the way it was yes, no, don't know. And I thought that really, if we're going to ask that question, we wanted some more information, that it's something that we ought to pursue. If we wanted to change the possible actions under 19AI or B, that's fine with me. But I think it was something that we might want to pursue. And if we think that having an open field there would get the sort of information that would be useful, that's fine. But I think this is like many of the others, that at least we need to give some different possibilities that can be answered, and if none of them apply, then they can go to the other and supply that open-ended answer. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much, Michael, and I think having sort of more specific options to choose rather than open-ended could be quite helpful. Susan, and then Kathy.
Yes, Michael has sort of said it. Kathy, Greg had proposed taking out question 19, the overarching question about, you know, were you aware of domains that were registered? Greg was the
Did Susan just go quiet?
I believe
yeah,
so.
Yeah, I thought I lost sound, or did we lose Susan?
We lost Susan. Can someone type in the chat that we lost her?
I'm not in the chat because Adobe froze me out. Just so you know, Julie, like Adobe, the last 2 days that we started using it, it's constantly freezing. I reloaded it on my machine. I did the flash test. I went back to the old days of getting ready to use it. Doesn't seem to matter. It's constantly freezing out my system.
I think we'll note that. We can alert our tech folks. I suspect if it's happening across the spectrum, they're probably hearing about it as well. But Susan says her phone has hung up. She needs to dial back. In the meantime, Kathy.
Okay. A question for Michael as well as everyone else. I'm going to type something into the side as an alternate to Q19A, where we replace kind of pre-selected things and maybe leave it more open-ended. So I'll work out the wording, but basically, the choice is yes, no, don't know, please explain what you did or what you didn't do and why.
Yeah, thank you, Kathy. And I'll just note that Stacey has in the chat, and I think what Michael, not to put words in your mouth, Michael, but, you know, to have options rather than an open text field is going to probably yield data that information that might be easier to parse. But I have Michael, please.
Oh, I guess Susan dropped out, although I'd love to hear her comments completed. But, I was just going to say I would leave, you know, some of these thoughts to Stacy and Greg because we do want to elicit the information, but we also want to make sure, addressing your concern, Kathy, that, you know, we're not pushing this in any particular direction. So if there's a way to do that, and perhaps it's opening with a certain type of activity and ending with others or as you were phrasing it, you know, did you take any action? If so, what was it? So you're pointing, but you're not providing suggested answers. But I think that's why we have Stacy and yesterday had Greg on the line to provide their expertise. Thanks.
Thank you. And I know Stacy says having options rather than open text fields where possible can make the survey much easier for respondents, and offering options gives them an idea, but we take the point of trying not to lead people to. So, Stacy, maybe we can take another look there, and it looks like, Kathy, you were going to give some samples, and thank you for that. And Lori agrees about options. They're quick and efficient. So just moving along, I'm looking at questions 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, and not seeing any comments on any of those questions. Does anybody have any comments people want to raise? There are edits, but I'm not seeing any questions or comments.
Yeah, Julie, real quick, it's Michael for the record. I did have a question, and maybe we can just spell this out. I know we all love being able to turn long phrases into short acronyms that nobody else understands. But even I, when I hit NORN, I sort of hit a wall. So I wonder if we just might spell that out again. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Michael. I actually really think that we should spell out everything and avoid acronyms. And especially even, if people choose to skip questions, it should be spelled out every time because that way you can be sure that there's no confusion. That's a really good Sorry, question 25, I was on mute. As a comment, this seems like more of an exclusion to this section. As the subsequent questions dig into various aspects, maybe move to the end of the section. Any adjustments to Christine's suggestion? I'm looking for hands. I'm not seeing any.
This is Michael real quick, and I would want to say I agree with that suggestion that it is conclusory. Let's put it at the end if we keep it.
Thank you very much, Michael. That's quite helpful. I'm looking at questions 26 through 29. I'm not seeing any comments. Does anybody have any comments on those questions? That's not counting question 29A, which does have comments. Moving then to the comments on 29A and B. 29A, wording is unclear. How many of those actions in Q29 were against new GTLDs, domains for which you received the norm? And on 29B, in new GTLDs, right. Now, we don't have Christina here, but do people generally agree that we need to tighten up the wording there? And the second suggestion is in new GTLDs. Kathy, please go ahead.
Yeah, just wondering how the aggregate helps us, UDRP, URS, and or litigation proceedings. Maybe I've just been in the weeds for too many years, but those all seem like very different types of proceedings to me, brought for different types of reasons based on different types of case-by-case evaluations. So what will these numbers tell us in the end? Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. Does anybody have any comments with respect to, or answers with respect to Kathy's question?
Yeah, this is
Larry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a couple of thoughts about this, probably arguing one way or the other. I'll tell you where I personally fall. So basically, I think where the question is getting at, I don't even remember what NORN means, but basically, have you brought any proceeding? What is a NORN? Can somebody remind me?
It's notice of recorded name, I believe.
Okay, yeah, I can't. But the bottom line is, basically, I think what we want to know is, as you as a trademark owner felt you had to act in a enforcement-type manner, because UDRP is enforcement, URS is enforcement, litigation is enforcement. There's three ways you can enforce, even if you received a NORN or when you received a NORN. I don't remember all the procedures around the NORN, so that's my – I just don't remember. But that being said, this gets at have you acted in with an enforcement action. Probably doesn't matter what the action is. But to your point, Kathy, if you had to divide these up, UDRP, UDRS, URS, or litigation, UDRP, URS probably falls in the same bucket, as they're both considered lower cost, more efficient means versus litigation, which are considered higher cost, higher, kind of higher stakes enforcement efforts. So I think the question to the group would be, do we want to just know generally if an enforcement effort has been taken, or are we interested in splitting it out? Where have people gone to the extent of a litigation versus not a litigation? I don't know. I think it probably doesn't matter if it's a litigation or URS or UDRP. If we're trying to get at, have you had to act for use of any domain names for which you received a NORN? So the action itself may or may not matter. Does that make any sense?
Thank you, Lori. Michael, and then Kathy.
Okay, Michael, for the record. So just by way of explanation, as I understand this question, is that this series under 29, and there's another misnumber, 28C there and D, is getting at actually a different question. One is whether or not you received a NORN and went further into an action. Generally, then the other questions that follow that are looking at the types of challenges that were made, and this is in response to the discussion of whether or not exact match notices was sufficient. And so this was trying to capture some of that information. That's how I understand this. So, for example, A is looking at receiving a NORN. B is looking at exact matches that led to UDRP, URS, or litigation, any sort of proceeding. And then C is non-exact matches. And then there were some variants in D, again, that look at some of the proposals that have been made as possible expansion, if those are desirable. But this is really looking at what actions have actually been taken by trademark owners, either exact marks, duplicate someplace in there, or some variation in there. That's what my understanding of 29 is. Thanks.
Yeah. Hi, this is Lori. Can I jump in again? Because I actually have the trademark clearinghouse definition up, because I just wanted to remind myself. The NORN are notifications sent by the trademark clearinghouse to a trademark holder during a sunrise period or trademark claims period that a domain name has been registered that exactly matches a label for one of his trademark records. So I think the question is, are these exact matches exact enough that you brought an action? So I don't think that knowing whether it's a UDRP, URS, or litigation makes a whit of difference, quite frankly, from a trademark owner's perspective. I don't know from a registrant's perspective, Kathy, but I don't think it should, because I think really what the question is going to, are these exact matches triggering an action by a trademark owner? Doesn't even matter what the action is from my point of view.
Thank you, Lori. And Kathy, I'll give the floor to you, but I'll note we are 1 minute to the top of the hour, and we'll probably need to carry this over to the call on Monday. Go ahead, Kathy.
Yeah, when I look at it broken down all this way, and I've gone back to the original and seen that a lot of it is there as well, but broken down into kind of 1, 2 to 5, 6, a clear question comes up, which is, did you win? Just because the proceedings were brought doesn't mean they were legal or reasonable or upheld. And that's kind of... So these questions may give us answers that don't lead to something useful. Was it overkill in some ways? You know, did you want, you know, did you bring an action against something in dot bike and you're nowhere near, your trademark is not in the categories of goods and services anywhere near dot bike? I'm not sure. I think we're spending a lot of time on something that may not yield the kind of information that's useful, or we have to go farther. Maybe it would be better just to ask them, what UDRP, URS, and court cases did you get involved in involving new GTLDs and second-level domain names, and how, you know, what were the results, and how do you feel about it? Maybe it's that easy. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. And Michael, I will give you the last word.
Okay, thanks. I just wanted to respond to Kathy's point, and I think it's a good place to end, and that is that trademark owners are not going to tell you exactly, you know, this is a confidential survey. I'm not going to give you the information if I start identifying my trademarks specifically in these actions. However, to your point, I think you're entirely right. So I think each of these has to ask, how many have you brought, and then how many were you successful in? And I think that addresses your question. But I think it's been put aside for now, but I think this is a vital discussion that's gone on within the PDP, and it's one that we're in a position to provide some useful data on. So I think inserting that follow-up for clarification so that it's not how many did you bring alone, but how many did you bring, how many were you successful in. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Michael. That's quite helpful. And I think Kathy says, good, how many brought, how many successful, to quote Michael. So thank you all. I have 1 minute past the hour. Thank you for spending so much of the time on your Friday. I see Kathy, you have your hand up. Kathy, very quickly, please.
Yes. What are we working on Monday? So kind of knowing who's on deck for preparations. I think we're still working on these, but it's also registrants and potential registrants and registrars are still.
I think yes. Thank you, Kathy. It's Julie. We are nearly finished with this survey, so we'll finish this survey out, and then I think we were going to go to registrars. I know that I think actually that was what we had planned to do, and that Susan was going to cover and was going to be preparing for that, not to point a finger at you, Susan. And she says, I need to edit the Google Docs this weekend. That doesn't sound very fun, Susan, but that's what I think we're planning to do on Monday. Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for joining. And, yep, living the dream, says Susan. Yep, indeed. Thank you all so much for joining. Go ahead.
Thanks a lot.
Yep, thank you, everyone. And thanks for all your hard work. Have a great weekend if you can, and we'll talk to you Monday.